All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Saturday, March 20th, 2021. Of course, my website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other programs I've participated in. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful and important links. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to the Barnes Review, the bi-monthly revisionist history magazine. Please do subscribe to these fine print publications if you do not already. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.com for all the details. All right, with that said, let me introduce our special guest this afternoon. Brandon Martinez is joining us for the very first time. Brandon is an independent author, journalist, and activist who maintains alt-right.com. Brandon, welcome to the program, sir. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, this was good. I'm glad that we were able to reconnect. We actually sort of knew each other multiple, I guess it's almost been 10 years now. And back when you were writing under Zion Crime Factory, you maintained zioncrimefactory.com. And I remember discovering your work even before then. I was sort of, kind of waking up to 9/11. And I remember coming across a website called iamthewitness.com, which is no longer online. It was maintained by a guy named Daryl Bradford Smith, who was an American guy living in France. I believe he's passed away, but he did a lot of very, very good work back in the day when there were very few people talking about Jewish power and sort of the New World Order agenda. And I remember he had a link over to an article you wrote, Israel Did 9/11, All the Proof in the World. And it was an incredibly eye-opening and powerful article that went viral at the time, I remember. And, had a huge influence on my thinking, obviously. So, we kind of connected after that. So, why don't you just take a minute and kind of introduce yourself and talk about your background and experience in the alternative media.
Yeah, I remember that. That was like 10 years ago. We both kind of came up in the same genre of topics. I think the first thing I looked into was 9/11. It was like the catalyst event that a lot of people were investigating and started to research and started to get into different topics. That was like the thing that sucked me into it. So like that, I started to research that event, and then I stumbled on different things like Zionism and like their involvement in 9/11. And that just led to all these other topics like World War II, Jewish power, the Holocaust, foreign policy, all of those topics kind of intersect in a certain way. And it was just like this rabbit hole that sucked me in. And I was like extremely energized to investigate these things because at that time I was probably like 18 years old and I had never heard about any of that stuff before, right? That it was completely hidden information. You'll never get that information in schools and universities, on television, in your local library. You just won't find that stuff. So it was so intriguing to me that I just became almost obsessed with it. And maybe in an unhealthy way at the beginning, it's like that red pill rage. You just like want to devour this information and get it out there to everybody you know, and you kind of become annoying to your friends and family. And so that's how it started. And I started like posting on forums and stuff, just like as I was doing the research, I would post what I found on these forums. And so some of those posts went viral. And then eventually I thought of starting my own website. And that the first website I had, I think it was a blog, and then I moved that onto an actual website called Zion Crime Factory, where I just kind of posted my articles and my research as I was looking into it. And I ran that for a few years. So that was the first website. I think that's where you found me and we bumped into each other. And then I did that for like, I think it was about 2 years I had that website. I think it was around 2010 to 2012. And then there was this whole drama and I lost that website. And then I took a break after that. And I decided, like, I was like 22, so I was still pretty young at that time. And I was thinking, you know, what am I going to do for a living? Because before that, I hadn't gone to college yet. Like, that was actually what helped me find the information, was that I had all this free time on my hands. So I wasn't in college at that time. And so I was able to kind of do this research, watch these documentaries, which most people just don't have the time for. So at that point, I decided, like, I'm going to do journalism, because that's kind of what I was already doing, just kind of like pro bono without pay. And so I went to journalism school for like a year just to get like the basics, improve my writing skills and stuff. But of course, that was just full of, you know, shit libs and leftists and stuff. So it wasn't really that intriguing for me to continue there. And I'd already been, I mean, at that point, I had written a book, basically, which became my book that I published in 2014, Grand Deceptions. So at that point, like, I'd already been writing all of this stuff, doing all this research and investigation. And those were the topics that I wanted to continue writing about. I didn't want to become some silly reporter in a small town, you know. So I ended up leaving there, and I tried to find, like, some kind of outlet that would publish the stuff that I write. And the only one I could think of was this Iranian site called Press TV, which was like this English language site that published a lot of this anti-Zionist material. And a friend of mine called Joshua Blakeney worked for them. And that's how I got hooked in with them, because he was reporting for them for Press TV in Canada. And it was a funny story, because Josh. He was also into the 9/11 truth movement, but he was kind of like a communist, but he was good on like Israel and Zionism. He was like calling that out publicly. So I knew about him, and I seen him in some newspapers. And I remember, like, for my old website, I wrote an article critiquing him and his professor. They were like this 9/11 truth tag team in Canada. And I wrote this article kind of critiquing him on his weak points, like he was a communist, and I explained how Jews are behind communism and the protocols and all this stuff. And I sent it to him and his professor, and they never responded to it. They just brushed it off. But then as I was in journalism school, I had to do like this project where I had to interview a journalist. And I thought, I'm going to interview Joshua Blakeney, because he was doing this Press TV stuff. So I contacted him. He didn't know who I was. He didn't know I was the guy that wrote that article, because I was anonymous when I wrote it. And eventually, so I did the interview with him, and I did for this project, and we continued to communicate through Facebook and stuff. And then at some point, someone like told him who I was, that I was the guy who wrote the article. And we had a big laugh over that, and eventually became good friends. And he started to come around on all the main topics that I had critiqued him on before. And then he kind of put me in touch with those Press TV people. So that's how I got that thing. I was just writing op-eds and stuff for them. It wasn't really they paid me for the op-eds, but it wasn't really like some full-time thing. It was more like just a part-time gig. And then eventually I just started another website called Non-Aligned Media to publish my stuff. And I was more focused on like the Middle East and stuff. I kind of moved away from some of the things I was writing about before. And I realized that Press TV was just like controlled opposition, because they would only let you write about topics that affect Muslims in the Middle East, right? They'll let you critique Jews and Zionism, so long as you're portraying the Muslims as victims. But if you talk about what Jews are doing to white people, for example, they won't let you write about it. So I cut ties with them. And then around 2016, when Trump got elected, I started this website, alt-right.com. I saw some stuff going on with, Richard Spencer and some of these alt-right people that were gaining prominence at the time. And I just kind of geared my focus more back onto the West and the agenda against white people, because it became so extremely obvious that they were ramping up this anti-white agenda. So that's the website I've been writing for about 4 years now.
Yeah, very interesting. So you have a long and storied history in the alternative media. And I know you've published a few books. I'm actually looking at alt-right.com/books, and you've got Grand Deceptions, Zionist Intrigue in the 20th and 21st Centuries, which, if I'm not mistaken, this is going to focus, this is the book that focuses primarily on 9/11 and the obvious Jewish role in 9/11. Yeah. So, yeah, and then you've also published Hidden History 2, Topical and Historical Essays on Zionism and Geopolitics. So, yeah, it's good, man.
That one was just banned from Amazon last week, actually.
Oh, wow, no kidding. That doesn't surprise me. Everything is getting banned on Amazon and really everywhere else at this point. It's ridiculous. You can't even you can't even report facts about Jews, and that's really all you've been doing over the course of the past 10 years or more.
Basically, yeah, and there's just no space in any kind of mainstream outlet or website to put that stuff out there. So I've always had to make my own websites and self-publish those books through Amazon, but now Amazon is just deleting it, so I'm going to have to find another publisher.
Right. Yeah, and you know, you kind of mentioned how you first got started with, you know, sort of researching 9/11, and it quickly led into all these other topics, and that was basically the same situation for me. I remember, you know, like when I was in college, I'm a little bit older than you. I'm 35. I don't know exactly how old you are, but I know I've always been at least five or even more, you know, years older than you. And I remember being in college and sort of being interested in, you know, independent alternative media. And I was very skeptical of like the mainstream, you know, mainstream politics in general, the mainstream media. I was, you know, going on blogs and reading different things on the internet. And then once I graduated, I had much more free time and I finally had my own computer and I was just pursuing my own interests. And it, you know, quickly led into all these very controversial topics, including 9/11. And I remember just really, you know, sitting down and thinking about 9/11 and questioning myself and just asking, why would I even believe the official narrative? What, you know, you sort of just blindly accept it without even really questioning it. And once you do start questioning it, it leads into so many other topics, as you know. And discovering that article that you wrote was really, really eye-opening. And it showed how 9/11 was done, who was behind 9/11, and certainly who benefited from 9/11. And it's to me, to this day, it's still one of the most important topics out there, although, you know, it doesn't really get a lot of traction anymore in the alternative media. But in my view, it is still a very critical topic.
Yeah, the one thing that actually put me onto that angle of, like, Zionism and Jews and their influence was that I started researching 9/11, and I noticed that these 9/11 truthers would get very nervous when you brought that stuff up, and they would constantly deflect it and try to say, no, Israel had nothing to do with 9/11. It was just George W. Bush and the CIA, and it was an inside job. And they just ignore all of these blatant Israeli Zionist neocon Jewish links and motives to do it. And that's what kind of like got me curious. I was like, why are these people so afraid to look at this, right? And a lot of these 9/11 truthers, these big name ones, were like Jewish themselves. And I was like, well, that makes sense. Like, you guys are Jewish and you don't want to talk about Israel, right? That I see what's going on here. And then I really started to dig into that angle. So it actually benefited me that they were trying to cover it up, basically.
Yeah, you know, and it was interesting because at the time, I mean, there were certain people that were covering the Israeli and Jewish connections to 9/11, like Christopher Bolin, for example, Victor Thorne, and I guess like American Free Press more generally. I mean, there were people reporting on it. Mike Delaney made 9/11 Missing Links that, you know, exposed all of this. But it was very, it was still a very controversial topic in sort of the broader 9/11 truth community. Now it seems to be, you know, front and center. I mean, guys like Jim Fetzer, Kevin Barrett, people that have been involved in the 9/11 truth movement going back to its its origins are you know, pretty much on board with this whole idea because it's so obvious, right? I mean, it's you can't really deny it. I mean, we have all these Israelis arrested on that. To me, was the most dumbfounding thing about it all. It's like our government actually arrested the people that were directly involved in this, and people don't even know about it. We have police reports and FBI reports documenting this, and yet these people were allowed to go back to Israel by the Jewish, likely dual citizen, head of the FBI at the time, Michael Chertoff. I mean, it's just incredible that this was allowed to take place. And people didn't even know about it, and people that were questioning 9/11 refused to address it.
Yeah, and they would call you an anti-Semite when they started doing that. I was like, there's something to this. And then, you know, immediately I just started looking into like the Holocaust and World War II, and found all the evidence and truths about those events as well. And just all of these things are interconnected back to the Jewish question. It's like it's a paramount issue that just permeates all these different historical events especially over the past 200 years. So like that was just incredible when I first discovered it. And that issue has kind of died off. Like today, not a lot of people talk about it because it's becoming less relevant because of today's, you know, different political climate, et cetera. The wars are kind of dying down a little bit, although they're still trying things over there. But at the same time, I still use it when I try to red pill people. So on some of these Omegle videos, I will bring up like the dancing Israelis and Chertoff and Silverstein and Netanyahu and these neocons. Like it's a really good topic to start with normies, you know, to just start off the red pilling process, because it's so blatant, it's so obvious. The evidence is absolutely overwhelming that these wars were just Jewish wars for Israeli benefit. You have a paper trail, you have physical evidence, you got arrests of Israelis. It's just so obvious, and it just demonstrates the treachery of these people, right? Filming the attacks, laughing about it, celebrating the attacks, saying how it benefits them. Once you learn those things, you really can't have much sympathy for these people. So it's still a good red pilling topic, and I still use it from time to time.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, and you mentioned your sort of current activism. So you not only you maintain alt-right.com, but you're also very active on Telegram, and you have a link right to your Telegram channel right on your main website. And you want to talk about how you kind of got into doing these Omegle videos and sort of just give us some details, because it's very fascinating videos you put out where you're just, you know, talking to just average people you come across on this website and sort of getting into these very controversial topics. It's very interesting, a very interesting form of activism.
Yeah, I remember I just started doing them recently, probably like maybe 4 or 5 months ago. I saw the first thing that got me onto it was I saw Catboy Cammy doing his little blackface stunt on there, where he dress up in blackface just to like shock these people and make fun of George Floyd. And that's how I found out about the website. I didn't even know about it. And I thought, well, this is fantastic. Like, I can just go on the site, meet random people. You put in like a tag like BLM or ACAB or whatever, Trump. And you just match up with these random people. A lot of them are young. It's probably most of the people on there are between the ages of like 14 and 20. So unfortunately, it's a bit of a young audience, but like, you know, it's still very useful. And I just went on there one day and I was like debating these people about all these topics like black crime and Jewish power and feminism and all these topics that I love to talk about, and just like destroying these libtards. It was just something to behold. It was like they were like short circuiting in the conversations. You could tell they a lot of these people are just complete morons, and they have no information. It's just media indoctrination, social media indoctrination, and they're just repeating slogans. And it was just so easy to just wreck these people. And so I started recording them. And I put out a few of the videos, and they got a lot of traction right away on my BitChute channel, Martinez Perspective. I put out a couple of the videos, and then I was like, Well, if people want to see more of these, I might as well keep doing it. I enjoy doing them. I love to debate these topics. I think it's a great form of activism because you're trying to. My purpose is not exactly just to red pill the person that I'm talking to. I try to if I see that they're open to it, but if anything, I record it and then I can red pill all kinds of other people by putting it up, and they just took off right away. I think I had I wasn't using that BitChute channel very often because I was just doing writing on my site, and then I put up four or five videos and they were getting 2,000 hits. One of them actually went viral, got 40,000 hits on BitChute with these three like very retarded skanks. And then I was this is a great form of activism. So I just kept doing it and I stuck to it, and I've been doing it for 3 months now. And these videos are everywhere. They're all over Instagram. People are uploading it to TikTok and Twitter. They're taking little clips. I like to do longer clips. There's some people that do it just to do this shock comedy thing where they go on and, say the N-word and then the person chimps out and that's it. But I infuse some comedy into it just to make it entertaining, some of the videos, but most of it is legitimate. I'm trying to debate these people. And it's just a lot of good content out of that. It's a gold mine for content, because you can always jump on there whenever the hell you want and make a new video, right?
Yeah. I'm looking at your BitChute channel right now, and I've seen a lot of these videos. But man, you're very active with this, and some of them are shorter, some of them are 20 minutes or even longer. And you'll encounter the most random people from. Younger, white chicks to black people, and everywhere in between, even Jews. I mean, I've seen you have conversations with Jews even on this, and it is very fascinating. And as you said, a good way of getting some of this information out and exposing it to other people for sure.
Yeah, and with this COVID hoax locking people in their houses and stuff, I mean, a lot of the IRL activism is just dead. The Zog is on a rampage arresting people for, misgendering trannies and stuff. It's so over the top what they're doing now that, people are afraid. People are just scared. A couple of these Amigo guys have been arrested. Three of them have been arrested. Three of the more popular ones. And I'm sure they have their sights on me. I've been on the ADL website and a few other these Jewish supremacist sites, and they just want to shut us up. Shut it down, Goyim. This is it. 2021, they're just implementing the Jew World Order global control grid, total surveillance, no privacy, hate speech laws across the Western world. Red flag laws to take your guns away. This is the final stages of the Jew World Order. We've been talking about this for 10 years, and everything we've said about it has come to pass. It's all come true, and they're not even hiding it anymore.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's so true. It's so blatantly obvious in your face these days. And yeah, this COVID thing is really made it, we see how this is having a direct, physical impact on people, where you're literally being forced to wear a mask and shut down your business and all this other nonsense. And I do want to talk a little bit about COVID as we proceed here, but I gotta ask you kind of a broad question. And you actually recently did an interview with Adam Kokesh and kind of laid out your sort of worldview and understanding of the Jewish problem, the Jewish question, and racial issues and whatnot. And you're pretty much an expert in this and explaining it, and you articulate it very, very well. So could you maybe give us an overview? How would you explain the Jewish question to a normie? How would you go about articulating it? What are the most important points in understanding the Jewish question or the Jewish problem?
Well, that's a big question. When I started out, I read, I think two books are very influential in, red pilling me on that topic, and the first one was Synagogue of Satan by Andrew Hitchcock, and there's another one called Controversy of Zion by Douglas Reed. And those two books together are pretty much all you need to understand the Jewish question from the very beginnings. So they talk about even the origins of Judaism and the Jewish people, and how they were expelled from Rome. They smashed the temple. They were a diaspora people roaming around, living as kind of nomads. They were like a state within a state in many societies, living in their own ghettos and communities. And then at some point they were liberated from the ghettos with the whole Enlightenment period, where they became more tolerant of other religions in Europe and allowed the Jews into higher positions. But they've always been like this nomadic mercantile or merchant group. So the main thing about them is that they're effectively like these middlemen or micromanagers of finance, and they engage mostly in sales of like alcohol and tobacco and drugs, and they've always been in those kind of positions in society. And what many critics of Jews would say is that they're just averse to real work, to labor. Hitler says that in Mein Kampf. Many of these religious people, like Martin Luther, said that as well. Is that Jews are kind of like this parasite class of just like money lenders and bankers. And, you know, today, I guess you'd say you can see them running all these hedge funds. And like a very classic example of how Jews gain their power is George Soros. Like he made $1 billion in one day by like short selling the British pound, this weird scheme on the British stock market that he had insider information. And that's how they become rich. You know, they will accuse their critics of being jealous of their success, but like you look at how they gain their money. And it's always through these underhanded financial schemes. The Rothschilds, I believe, did a similar thing where they had insider information during a war between England and France, and you know, manipulated the stock market to gain wealth very rapidly, and that's how they usually gain their money is through these tricks, these financial tricks, these schemes, and everything they do is to benefit themselves as a group and not a host population. It's usually designed to undermine the host population, to weaken it so that they can thrive as a group. So as this diaspora minority group, they've always worked against the interests of the host population, who they view as a threat or a competitor, right? They see Gentiles, as it says in their religious text, they see Gentiles as inferior, as hostile people that they have a right to effectively enslave. I mean, their holy texts say that that Jews will have, you know, 1,000 slaves when the Messiah returns, Gentile slaves. One of the chief rabbis of Israel said that Goyim exists to serve Jews as slaves. Like, this is a pretty common concept in Judaism. They believe themselves to be the chosen people, the supreme race, etc. And so they always act in this very narcissistic way, where they try to rise through the ranks of power and then exploit the system, use it for their own advantage and to the detriment of everyone else. So that's right. Like, that's just the very basic critique of Jews, and you can see that throughout history to the present day. It's not changed one bit. And the fact that they've got their own state now, Israel, hasn't changed their behavior whatsoever, because some of the early founders of Zionism thought that if Jews got their own soil, that they would stop being like parasitic and stop kind of trying to undermine societies, and they would just become a more productive people. But if you look at Israel today, it's like the world capital of financial scams. Like, you look up the binary options scam, like these Israelis are just hoodwinking unsuspecting people out of their money. and Israel is like the pedophile haven for Jews around the world. It's as Hitler said, my
organ trafficking. Like, I mean, these people are monsters. Yeah.
Drug trafficking, weapons trafficking, all of that. They make their money through just illicit means for the most part. And Hitler said Israel would just become like this haven for crooks. And it's exactly what it is today. It's a haven for crooks. Some of those Jewish mobsters went to Israel after they were indicted in the U.S., like Meyer Lansky. So it's like just this haven, this safe space for Jewish criminals. And they're trying to use it as like a base to rule the world effectively. And that's ultimately the goal of Judaism, is world domination. They believe that they will run the world from Jerusalem. And they even said that numerous times, like Ben Gurion said that. We see the results, the fruits of this, their influence today, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, and one of the key aspects of understanding the Jewish question is, and this often comes up in the videos that you do, in the chats that you have on Omegle, is people still fail to recognize this, that the Jews, I don't necessarily consider them like a race, but there is a racial component to it. They are a very distinct ethnic group of people. They're not merely, you know, like a religious minority or, you know, a section of like white people more generally. They are a very unique, ethnocentric, hostile group of people that views themselves as separate and distinct from other people. And yet people still have a hard time understanding this when, you know, this is how Jews operate. This is what they often say and even write about in their own, you know, publications. So I think this is critical in actually understanding the Jewish problem. And in Mein Kampf, I remember reading it for the first time, and Hitler articulates this all very, very well. And it was something that I hadn't really thought about until reading it, right? I mean, Jews are a very distinct group of people. And once you realize that, it makes obvious sense, right? At least in my experience, you know, growing up and dealing with Jews and coming to that realization that, look, they are not like a religious minority. They're not like, you know, a section of white people or whatever. They are a distinct group of people with their own unique interests that are very hostile to traditional Western Christian civilization.
Yeah, I mean, they try to pretend that sometimes, like, you get different answers from Jews about what they are. Like, so some of them will say, we're just a religion. But then others will say, no, we're an ethnic group, right? And then in order to get into Israel, you have to be an ethnically Jewish, or you have to prove that your ancestors were Jewish, which is not just a religion. And you can obviously be an atheist Jew and get in there based on ethnic grounds. So
they even do DNA tests, you know, in order to become a citizen of Israel, where proving your Jewish lineage. And there's a huge debate and controversy right now that's going on in Israel. And if I'm not mistaken, the Israeli Supreme Court recently ruled that they were going to do away with this sort of racial-based, you know, citizenship test or whatever. I don't know all the details, but yeah, it's a huge debate going on in Israel. But historically, you're right. I mean, you had to prove your Jewish ethnicity, your Jewish lineage. So yeah, there is clearly a very real racial or ethnic component to understanding the Jewish problem.
Yeah, they're kind of like they're not like a pure race. They were nomads, so they kind of just dipped into these different countries and almost just stole the genes of those different races as they moved around. So you can see they kind of blend in wherever they go. Like they somewhat marry into like the host population and then induct those people into Judaism just to kind of blend in. And you could see, like, you know, European Jews obviously look more European than like a Jew from Morocco or a Jew from, Kazakhstan, or there's maybe even some black Jews in Ethiopia. They tend to kind of resemble the people that they're living amongst because they do, steal the genes of those people. So they're kind of like a mongrel race of people, but they do this trick where they pretend that they're white when they want to, or they say that they're white when they want to shame the white race. So there's this channel on Telegram called The Noticer, and it's got like thousands of examples of Jews on Twitter saying, "Dear white people, you have to give up your white privilege. And then there's another tweet saying, I'm Jewish, by the way, I'm not white. So you see the game that they play, they can blend in as white and then use that to pretend that they're, heretics against white supremacy or something, but really they're just this other ethnic group that doesn't share the interests of white Gentiles, and
right.
They're just trying to pretend that they're white so they can use it against us, basically. So
they pretend they're white and like lecture white people about how evil they are and how, you know, they have white privilege and they need to be ashamed of themselves and embarrassed about their history. And but at the same time, you know, in the next tweet they're saying, oh well, I'm actually Jewish, you know, I'm not white. So yeah, it's the double standards and the hypocrisy is through the roof with these people. And if you simply start noticing these things and realizing basic facts about Jews and even reading their own, you know, like I have a huge section on my website, News from the Jews, where I'm literally just like citing and quoting articles published in explicitly Jewish publications proving everything that we're saying here, right? And yet they will denounce you as like an anti-Semite, as like a conspiracy theorist for noticing these things. And for pointing out basic facts about Jews and their power and their influence and their agenda and what they've been up to over the years.
Sorry, one thing.
No, it's okay. It's one of the most weaponized words out there that is used to just delegitimize anybody speaking frankly and critically about Jews. And just, again, stating basic facts about what they're doing, what their agenda is. And it's been very effective, obviously. I mean, they literally want to like criminalize anti-Semitism in the West, and in certain countries, they've come a long way in doing just that.
Yeah, they're such like disingenuous schemers. Like you can find articles in Jewish sources that will boast of the fact that they're doing something and they're pursuing an agenda, whether it's gun control or whether it was the Trump impeachment hearings. I saw an article saying the Jews behind the impeachment hearings, and this was in like the Jewish Daily Forward or something like that. And then they have another article in the same newspaper saying anti-Semites say Jews are behind the impeachment.
Right. They just documented all of the Jews involved in it. Same thing with like the Biden cabinet. Yeah. It's like, look at all the Jews in the Biden administration. Oh, here's this one anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist pointing all this out. Yeah, it's insulting. It's like these people just treat us like we're idiots.
The same with the coronavirus. There's an article in the Jerusalem Post saying, who are the Jews behind the coronavirus vaccines? And then another article saying, anti-Semitism rising in anti-vaxxer movement study finds. So it's basically like they can notice their influence and power and be proud of it, but you filthy goyim can't recognize it and point it out, or else you're anti-Semites, right? That's their MO.
Yeah.
That's always been their MO, is like they can boast of Jewish power when they feel like it to beat their chests, but the goyim can't notice it. The goyim shouldn't notice it.
Right. Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's the whole concept of anti-Semitism in a nutshell. And, you know, there are so many examples of this. I mean, think about, like, I think it was published originally in 2007 or 2008, that article by Joel Stein that was published in, I believe originally it was the LA Times, where I think that, what was the headline? Like, How Jewish is Hollywood? Come on, man.
Yeah.
And he just goes through and, like, lists every single studio in Hollywood and talks about how all of them are run and controlled by Jews. And then you look at all the actors involved in Hollywood, all the producers, all the directors. I mean, it is obviously a very Jewish-dominated industry. And here's a guy writing about it, celebrating it, boasting about it. You know, he's proud of this. He wants Jews to control the government, the media, Hollywood, etc., and continue to do so. He says it right there in the article.
Yeah, they have this duality where they can be proud of their accomplishments, which is taking over a goyim society, But the Goyim can't revolt against that power. The Goyim can't question that power. The Goyim's not allowed because Goyim are slaves. That's their mentality, is that we're just subhumans. We're workhorses in the fields, and we only exist to serve their interests. So that comes out time and time again in their sources, and no wonder everybody hates them. No wonder they're the most reviled group in the entire world. Who wouldn't hate a hypocrite? You know, who wouldn't hate somebody that's stabbing a knife in your back? You know, it's just absurd how they continue to push their agenda and attempt to silence anyone who doesn't bow to them. Right? There's so many examples.
Exactly. Yeah, and one thing I've noticed studying the Jewish problem over the years is they are, I think without doubt, the most ethnocentric group of people in America, certainly, and probably, you know, you could probably, you know, apply this to like a worldwide scale. They are extremely ethnocentric. They're very aware of their Jewish identity. In many cases, they're driven politically and socially by their Jewish identity. And one of the most, and you can see this reflected in public, you know, public opinion polls and stuff. One of the most central aspects of a Jew's identity is the Holocaust, and is this idea of, you know, decades long of oppression, and, you know, Jews have been mistreated and stereotyped. So they have like this victimhood mentality that's central to their identity. And of course, the Holocaust plays right into that. It's really incredible. And that gets to, you know, a topic that you've been writing about for years is, you know, revisionism in general, revising World War II, taking a second look at the official Jewish narrative of World War II. And that applies not only to the fake Holocaust narrative, but really the entire narrative more broadly, and taking a second look at what Adolf Hitler and National Socialist Germany were all about.
Yeah, that's they don't want you to look at that, and they're so afraid of you looking into that that they've made it illegal to question it in a dozen or so countries in Europe. I mean, they have worked tirelessly to censor anyone looking into that and writing about it. They've brutalized people. They've ruined their lives. They've terrorized them. Ernst Zundel is a perfect example of that. Like, the guy went through numerous court cases and even attempted, you know, assassinations. Basically, they burned his house down. These vindictive, vengeful, hateful, spiteful people will just try to destroy anything that threatens their power, because that narrative is the basis of their global hegemony. That narrative of the Holocaust gives Jews a carte blanche to effectively conquer the planet, to do whatever the hell they want to do in Palestine, to take the land that they want to take, kill who they want to kill, move them off the land, establish their state, blackmail all these other countries into supporting their state, convincing all these other countries to go to war with their enemies in the Middle East to prevent another Holocaust, right? It all comes back to that. So it's just protecting and safeguarding the Jews in their interests, and they think we have to do the dirty work for them.
Yeah,
all of it comes back to that.
Yeah, I mean, really, it is. It's the linchpin of the entire anti-white, you know, New World Order system, and it's so obvious. And they will explicitly tell you this if, you know, if you follow Jewish publications. And as I mentioned, it's like a central aspect of their identity, and it's also been used to pathologize any form of like positive, healthy, pro-white identity. To where if you, you know, identify as like a white man in America today, you're demonized as like a white supremacist, racist, who hates other people and wants to oppress other people. So it works to strengthen their identity while delegitimizing and pathologizing a healthy white identity.
It covers all the bases, doesn't it? It benefits them in so many ways. It basically defangs the white man and empowers them to be ethnic supremacists who have a free pass to murder, to rob, to do blackmail, and everything they want to do to secure their interests in the world. Like, they want to be supremacists, but they don't want white people to be supremacists or to even have a white identity. They want to have their Jewish identity and safeguard it in their own state, but they won't allow whites to have it because they want to be able to run the governments in the West at the same time. Like, they want it both ways. They want their state, but they want our states as well. They want to have their economy, and they want to run our economy. They're just global financial hucksters and ethnic supremacists, and they've brought nothing but misery to white people whenever they've been in our midst. Nothing but misery and terror and destruction. And they continue along this path today. You know, they're running this whole white privilege scam. Like, these Jewish intellectuals, these Marxists, mostly Jewish intellectuals, push the white privilege scam. And yet they're the most privileged, pampered, and powerful group in the entire planet, the most successful financially in the United States and in Russia. They're 25% of the top billionaires there. They're 25% of the top 400 richest people in America. Wherever they are, they got most of the money and run much of the media. And nobody's saying, you know, there's too many Jews in Hollywood. There's too many Jews in the news media. Too many Jews in the Federal Reserve Bank. There's too many Jews in Wall Street. But they say there's too many whites. So these Jews, basically, they even say that about their own industries. Like, I've seen Jews from Hollywood, like the guy Jonah Hill. He's like, Hollywood's too white. No, it's too Jewish. So, like, they try to blend in as white and then attack the alleged whiteness of an industry, but it's actually Jews. So, like, they're going to bite off more than what they chew, because what they're doing is they're riling up the non-whites, and they're inciting them against the white race. But these non-whites are just going to label those Jews as white. Because anything that's light-skinned, those non-whites say it's white. So those Jews are just going to be lumped in with whites, and those non-white rabid mobs are going to go after the Jews eventually as well. And you can see that that's actually happening a little bit in New York with some of those black Nation of Islam-type people who have done attacks on Jews. So, you know, hopefully, like, this comes back to bite them at some point. I think Jews, they kind of get ahead of themselves sometimes, and they don't like plan things out perfectly, and yeah, they're not invincible. Like, that's what we need to understand, is that they're not invincible. They can take the L sometimes, and we can have a W, a win. We just have to be smarter than them, basically.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, I think one of the biggest realizations, you know, reassessing World War II is understanding that there were political solutions to this problem, and National Socialist Germany and Adolf Hitler provided them. And they took serious, concrete steps to not only, like, identify and recognize the problem, but enact policies that prevented the Jews from, you know, systematically taking over and destroying their country. And, you know, so fake Holocaust narrative is basically facilitated, you know, our collective, like, you can't even look at World War II because of this fake Jewish horror story that's been institutionalized across the entire world, and recognize that these people were righteous, they were honest, they were truthful, and they were trying to do the right thing, and they implemented policies to put the Jews in check, basically, and prevent them from exploiting their country.
Well, Hitler came up with some pretty amicable solutions to the problem. He simply wanted to move Jews out of Europe, and, well, first Germany and then Europe, put them into their own state, put them into their own homeland. And they didn't take the deal, right? Or at least some faction of Jews decided that they didn't want to take the deal, or they wanted to just somehow destroy Hitler, but also get Israel, and it worked to their advantage. Like, they accomplished both of their goals. They destroyed Hitler, and they got their own state with the help of these Jewish puppets like Churchill and Roosevelt and Stalin and so forth. So they managed to outmaneuver the Germans with their financial power. It all comes back to their financial power. It just takes like three Jews in these top positions in the United States or the UK to move entire countries against their enemies, right? And so they will never settle for some kind of amicable solution with Gentiles, because their agenda is not to just have the Israel in the Middle East and all Jews safeguarded there. Their agenda is to rule the world, is to annihilate their enemies and enslave the rest. And so they'll never take a deal. They'll never accept peace terms. They're belligerent. They're a belligerent people. And you can even see that in some of the debates I do with them. They're just belligerent. They're bellicose. You know, they just won't admit the faults of their people, their group. They won't admit the truths that we speak. You know, sometimes they have to, sometimes they can't deny it. Sometimes it's impossible for them to deny it, but they always deflect it. And they always try to wiggle out of taking responsibility for it. So we cannot live with them. The only solution is a separation between Jews and Gentiles.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Well, there's a couple final topics I wanted to bring up and get your take on before we wrap up. The first one is, I know you've done some videos and some commentary about President Trump and the America First movement more generally now. I'm curious, what is your overall assessment of Trump, his presidency, his legacy, what he stood for?
Yeah, I think Trump was you cut out there a bit.
No, go ahead. I'm just curious what your overall assessment of Trump and because I mean I think that there's, you know, some positives and some negatives. Ultimately, he turned out to be, you know, basically, in my view, a total fraud. He was a tough talker, but he didn't really get anything accomplished.
Yeah.
But that being said, I think he changed politics to a certain extent. I think he really did a huge job discrediting the media, which is very important. But ultimately, at the end of the day, he didn't actually accomplish much in my mind, and turned out to be a total charlatan.
Yeah, I think exactly what you just said. I would agree with that. The two positives we can give him are kind of galvanizing nationalism and making it acceptable again to be a patriot. So he adopted all the language of patriots and of conservatives, and spoke, you know, a big game about immigration. That was his number one topic. Largely, they knew that's the topic that white people were most concerned about. And so they kind of did these like focus groups and stuff when they were going to run Trump for president. They knew those were the topics that would get the votes. So they just used him as like this steam valve release, where they propped him up. Like, he's always been like a Jewish shill, you know, from the beginning. He's always been tied in with Jews, and they bailed him out when he was bankrupt, like some of these Rothschilds, and he's always been very Jew friendly. I remember he attacked David Duke and Pat Buchanan back in the day when they were running for office. And so he's always been this like Jew friendly personality, but then they wanted, if they're going to allow this sentiment to filter out, like the white people are angry. So they're like, oh, let's just use Donald Trump, who's Jew friendly, to kind of be that guy to sap up the energy. And so I think that's why they picked him to do it. But of course he just did it all to kind of derail it and make sure it didn't go where the Jews would be uncomfortable. So he is kind of his own guy, in the sense that he's not like totally just a stooge of like billionaires and stuff. He's kind of a wild card because of his personality. That's just how he is. So he did a few good things in attacking the media and discrediting the media, as you said. I think there's like, during his presidency, the all-time low of trust in the media. So that was good. There's a few good things, side effects of Trump's presidency. But ultimately, he didn't do much of what he said. I saw this like meme where it pointed out stuff he said during the presidential run, like, put Hillary in jail, build the wall, pull America out of wars. But then you see after he gets into office, it's like Israel first, mess with Iran, tax cuts for billionaires, and all this stupid shit that didn't help white people, right? So that's effectively how I see him. He's a charlatan. He was ultimately just kind of controlled by the same people. as many of these like fake populist parties in Europe, they have the same thing, right? It's like, we're against illegal immigration, but we love Jews and Israel, and we're Israel first, right?
Right. So yeah, exactly.
It's the same kind of scam. Like, Jewish billionaires are funding these people. They say, you can't talk about XYZ, only focus on illegal immigration and Islam. That seems to be the gambit. And Trump, yeah, he proved himself to be a total fraud when he disavowed all of his supporters at the Capitol. You know, he just meekly went out of office and didn't really put up that much of a fight other than claiming the election was rigged a few times. So I have no hope, and anyone who still thinks Trump is our guy is just hopelessly deluded at this point. He's a total fraud.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I don't think that there's really a political solution, in the sense that someone who shares our views can get elected. It's utterly impossible. In a system that Jews dominate, both the left and the right, Democrats and Republicans, they control the financial system. They got a death grip on the media. You cannot win an election in that environment. They will just torpedo anyone who tries to get that going. So I don't think those like AMNAT, America First people are doing much of anything productive, because they're kind of just, they're putting their energy and their money back into a broken system that doesn't work. So ultimately, they're just reformists who think they have a shot at getting into power somehow, even though it's basically impossible and futile. So I've been saying that for a while now, that we shouldn't invest back into the system. Let's divest out of the system as much as we possibly can, and try to secede from the system. I think that's more productive. Even if it doesn't come to fruition, at least we can form some kind of white community somewhere, and get away from Zog, because Zog is out to get white people right now. We're target number one for Zog. So put your money in something that is fruitful for you personally and like a white community, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah, well said, good take. I agree. I mean, the system is so utterly broken and corrupt, and just there's no space for these sorts of ideas. You're right. I mean, there'd be no way to even get elected. And even if you do get elected, I don't know if you know what's the guy's name? He's with the right stuff. James Alsup. Here was a guy who actually legitimately got elected and on like a local Republican level. And they kicked the guy out. Like, they just basically, canceled him, even though he legitimately won the vote. I can't remember all the details, but he was basically like in a position of leadership at the local level. And once they found out, his views and stuff, they basically just canceled him. So it's like, how can you even work in the system at all?
There was a spot of almost no relevance, and they decided to drive him completely out of that, even though he had no power to influence anything really. So imagine what they do to you if you were running for Congress. Even Laura Loomer, who's like this Jewish shill, Israel first shill, she couldn't even win her congressional spot because she's right wing on the question of Muslims. If she can't win, and she had Jewish money behind her, she had all these Jewish donors backing her, and she couldn't even win. Imagine a guy who's openly talking about Jewish power, right? It's futile. It's so futile, and they kind of want you to just throw your money into something. It's like a casino. It's like going and playing blackjack and just continuously losing every bet, and continuing to play like an addict, right? That seems to be the case. It's like a Jewish casino. This political system's totally rigged, financial system's totally rigged, and then these AMNATs are going around saying, look, we're going to get our people elected and put forth some bills in Congress, and that's going to change everything. We're going to reduce the illegal immigration a little bit, Wow, right? Is that really a huge victory? I don't think so. We need to be thinking about secession or Balkanization. I think that's going to happen naturally. White people are going to do white flight. They're going to go to the whitest areas, and I think that's a positive thing.
Right. Yeah, and to kind of wrap up here, you kind of mentioned COVID, but I'm curious to get your take on it because it's this to me is like, I guess, like the medical 9/11, like the excuse that they've been waiting for to implement this like global technocratic medical dictatorship. It's really out of control and it's impacting everybody directly in a very real way. So I'm
Yeah.
curious, like from the beginning, I mean, I remember when this first was sort of unfolding. It's been a year now. And I was very skeptical. I didn't know, maybe the virus was like real, but they had to be hyping it up and exaggerating it. That was sort of my take at the beginning. But now I'm at a point where I question literally every single aspect of this whole COVID, quote unquote, pandemic situation, including
Yeah.
the virus itself. I mean, I don't know. What's your take?
Yeah, when it first happened, I thought it was real at first, and then I noticed that I saw some of these crazy videos coming out of China of like dead people all over the streets, and like saw a video where you could hear like hundreds of people like moaning out of their apartments and stuff. Just crazy stuff that looking back on it, I'm thinking those videos are fake now because it's just outrageous, and you don't see any of that happening in our countries, right?
Yeah, I mean, remember they were like reporting that people were literally like dropping dead in the street and stuff like that. I mean, it was just
Exactly.
total fear porn, yeah.
It was so outrageous, and clearly just some kind of Hollywood production to convince us that this is like a deadly pandemic that we have to all be afraid of. It was clearly just an attempt to convince us of some danger and something that we need to fear so we agree to all these insane lockdown measures. And then eventually I started to question. I was like, this is clearly just some power grab by these globalists like Bill Gates and these psychopaths. And these funny because the liberal narrative changed. First they're like, no, don't close the borders to China, don't close any borders. And like in Italy, there's these retards doing like hug a Chinaman. Chinese people are not a virus. So these libtards first were like doing this thing where they didn't want this to be used against immigrants and stuff. But then they changed it and started promoting the opposite, that this is the deadliest thing we've ever seen in the history of the world. This is like the new bubonic plague, and we're all gonna die. And then just, cranked up the fear porn to 150 degrees. And then now they're just continuously using this to destroy our economies. It's so obvious. They're using it to destroy the middle class, to shut down all of these small businesses, put them out of business, and the billionaires are raking in the cash. Like I've seen things saying they've made like 15 billion in the past like year. Because they're making all these moves on the stock market. These parasites in Wall Street are just making a killing off of this stuff, and they
Yeah,
probably have
the wealth
insider
is being,
information, right?
like the financial elite across the world really have increased their wealth by I don't know what the percentage is, but it's through the roof. I mean, they're really consolidating, and as you mentioned, destroying the economy, closing down small businesses, and monopolizing everything. It's so apparent and so obvious. And what kills me is so many people just willingly going along with this. It's cr I mean, imagine owning your own
Lemmings.
business and like, okay, I guess I'll just shut down because the government said. I mean, what happened to our country? It's crazy.
It's really shown. It's basically like drawn this dividing line in society. It's like the smart people, the people who have good instincts, people who have common sense, have rejected this bullshit. But then all these like very conformist, probably low testosterone people have just gone along with absolutely everything, and not only got along with it, but supported the brutality of the cops busting into people's houses and tackling teenagers and old ladies who don't have a mask on. Just the most ridiculous, insane police state stuff that you never expect to happen. And they're supporting it and cheering it on. These retard lemmings are happy to see this happen. Those people are, this is like some kind of genetic culling process. It's like the weak people are going to just conform and die and take poison cocktail sterilization vaccine, and their genetic line will be dead, and the smart people won't take that vaccine, and we're going to isolate ourselves and try to get away from this and do what we need to do. So it's kind of good in a way that it's separating the wheat from the chaff in a way. And we need to fight it. The smart, intelligent people have to fight this and work together to get away from this evil tyranny. They're using it to just destroy all of our freedoms, civil liberties, our jobs, everything. It's just this total Jew World Order takeover. They're implementing all of their plans, whether it's hate speech laws, like they're amplifying those to make it illegal to do hate speech in your own house. Like I saw they passed that in the UK. And they're using it as the cover to just arrest anyone who has any tendency to resist their tyranny. That's what it is. It's a social experiment. They want to see how much tyranny we're willing to put up with before there's like a mass revolt. You know, this is a test. This is a big fucking shit test. And, you know, I'm convinced it's totally fake. I don't believe any of the numbers they put out about deaths and, you know, cases, that the PCR tests are fake. Like they're inaccurate as hell. And there was one president of Tanzania who was kind of going against this COVID shit, and he just died of a heart attack. Mysterious.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. Yeah, he was questioning the vaccine, questioning COVID in general. And all of a sudden he just so happens to die. Dead. Yeah. So yeah, no, you're totally right. I completely agree with you. And it is, oh my gosh, it is so maddening just seeing people willingly go along with this and not even stop and ask questions. People lining up to take the vaccine, you know, including people I know that you would think would know better, but still go along with it. It's crazy, man. You're right. It's really drawing a huge dividing line between the people that still have some common sense and some good instincts versus the masses of just brain dead lemmings, you know, literally like sheep going to slaughter.
Yeah, they've even had to pull that one of the vaccines, like the AstraZeneca vaccine. I heard they had to pull that because people were getting blood clots. I've seen numerous stories of people dying after getting that vaccine. This is like a fucking death poison cocktail. I mean, it's either designed to kill you or sterilize you. Yeah. So anyone who takes that is a complete idiot.
Yeah, and you know, everybody that I've talked to that has taken it, it's the same story. They take the vaccine and they're like deathly ill. You know, they get super sick, they're bedridden. It's like, wouldn't you rather just get the damn whatever virus they say? I mean, you're going to recover naturally rather than taking this experimental vaccine and being bedridden for a week. It's just people are just ridiculous.
And none of the heads of these pharma companies will even take their own vaccine because they know it's poison. So, you know, you have almost no chance of dying of COVID, even if it's real, if you're under like 65 and have no like serious diseases or conditions. It's literally less deadly than a regular flu. They've just categorized regular flu as COVID now. Like it's total hoax.
Right.
Total hoax.
Yeah. Brandon, well said, my friend. It was good to reconnect. I'm glad we were able to do this. I will, of course, have a link over to your website, alt-right.com, where people can check you out. And as I mentioned, I know you're really active on Telegram and also BitChute. So I hope people check out your work. And we'll have to do this again in the future.
Thanks for having me, man. Good to get back in touch. And we'll keep in touch in the future. Keep up the good work.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Take care, man. I'll talk to you soon.